we are presenting the annual report is the agenda item, and over and above that, maybe we'll just highlight just a few issues that we have to highlight. But basically, in terms of the focus of today, is what happened in the year financial year 2006-07. Unfortunately, I will present this. I'm not so sure what happened with the arrangement. So I will take you through the presentation which we will be having in front of you. Although it will not be as easy as it was up there, especially when there is a graph, you want to highlight issues, it becomes a bit difficult.
Can you check are we working on trying to get
in terms of the presentation, I'll be covering basically the organizational overview, basically being my first year at the helm, 2006-07, and the SACA legacy being Civil Aviation Authority in terms of its past. I'll be covering the key drivers of the strategy, the strategic objectives, five of them, and towards an A1 project, which is a project that emanated from the strategy that the board put together. And I will be focusing as well on the key priorities, short, medium term, as well as long term. And then I will be looking at the progress on those strategic objectives to date, financial review, the audit performance, critical success sectors, and what I will be adding just briefly will be just on recent incidents, and then I will conclude on that. Well, let's start from the vision of the CAA being our vision is that we want to be regulating excellence in aviation safety and security is our vision. And our mission being that we want to be a player in the international arena that seeks to promote and maintain safe and secure civil aviation environment in South Africa by regulating and overseeing. This emanates directly from the South African Civil Aviation Act, which gives the Civil Aviation Authority the mandate to control and maintain safe and secure civil aviation environment in South Africa. In terms of the legacy, was appointed on 16th of March, and there were challenges, of course. Just highlight them briefly in terms of the lack of capacity in the organization. One would even say it was almost in a state of being dysfunctional, and the care non-compliance was one of the issues which have been ongoing for quite some time. And conflict of interest being that we had a situation where exec management was also part of the union and farming and very awkward situation. That's what we had. I'm just highlighting some issues, low employee morale, etc., etc. Basically, serious lack of management. Basically, that also emanated from the fact that for a period of more than 3 years, there wasn't any permanent CEO at the CAA. Moving from there, I'll just say one of the key drivers of the strategy in this respect. Let's hope we'll catch up with the. The key driver being, in terms of the Civil Aviation Authority Act, and you can only, because this is the Act, you can only read from it as it is articulated by the Act, South African Civil Aviation Act, is to control and regulate civil aviation and to oversee functioning and development of the civil aviation industry, specifically to control, regulate, and promote civil aviation safety and security. So it's the control as well as the promotion of civil aviation in South Africa. That's as per the Act. Continuing on the key drivers, one can talk about ICAO critical elements. There are 8 ICAO critical elements that determine the functioning of effective aviation system, effective aviation system, there are 8 of them. Also, that drives what the strategy we're going to be putting together. That's an international, based on international norms in terms of those 8 critical elements. Then there's a DOT performance agreement. I think if the committee can move to the actual diagram, it explains it better. Just after that, where it says strategic objectives, the diagram explains it better. Basically, it says the foundation is the ICAO Convention and Standard, International Civil Aviation Authority. That's the basis of where the Civil Aviation Authority, on which it is based. Based on that, the country comes up with legislation that supports those standards from the International Civil Aviation Authority, being South African Civil Aviation Act, aviation, all the other aviation acts. There's quite a bit, a couple of those, because the South African Civil Aviation Authority came to being in 1998, which indicated that Civil Aviation Authority will be responsible for managing all the other aviation acts in terms of the 1998 Civil Aviation Authority Act. Once you put that together, then there is a performance agreement between the organization and the Civil Aviation Authority, between the Minister and the Department of Transport and the Civil Aviation Authority. And that performance agreement, again, is informed by the Civil Aviation Act as well as the ICAO Convention Standard. What is it that is the Civil Aviation Authority carrying out the mandate? That's basically what the focus of the performance agreement is. Every financial year that is drawn up, based on that, the board comes with an organizational strategy which is meant to address that performance agreement as well as the carrying out of the mandate of the Civil Aviation Authority. And currently, what the board came up with has 5 strategic objectives which cover basically the whole spectrum of activities under the Civil Aviation Authority. If I can just go through those 5 strategic objectives, one of them is to establish and enforce a regulation in order to ensure aviation safety and security. This strategic objective hangs on the actual mandate of the Civil Aviation Authority. 2 is to oversee industry functioning and development to facilitate industry growth. Again, the first 2 are based specifically on the mandate, the core mandate of the Civil Aviation Authority. And 3, building effective organizational systems so that the authority is efficient, effective, and is run in a professional manner. And those are systems, one could say, strategic objective systems, but we are not talking just systems in operational manner. We're talking about systems which are strategic in terms of ensuring that the core mandate is accomplished. So that is strategic objective 3. 4 is about growing customer satisfaction in terms of the service, customer excellence. And last one, which is more important here because more important as well, since the Civil Aviation Authority is about skilled people rendering a service, doesn't manufacture any equipment or machinery or anything of that nature. So to attract, develop, and retain skilled human capital is key to ensuring that the authority performs what it's supposed to be doing. So those are the 5 strategic objectives, which as the exec, we take that from the board and we execute it in terms of what we are supposed to do as the exec. Trying to implement that, we looked at it and said the best way to implement it was to look at it as a project. And the project is a very efficient manner of implementing anything because it will have milestones, it will have a budget, it will have people, it will have resources, etc., etc. So we put it in a project fashion so that we could effect the board strategy. In that respect, we introduced it towards an A1CAA project, which is a project aimed at mainly four objectives, one being to raise the bar on aviation safety and security. You'll note that there are verbs in there, which is action-orientated. One, to transform SACA into a professional, efficient, and effective organization. And 3, to deliver superior customer service. And lastly, to make SACA an employer of choice. You'll note that these are not not different from the actual five strategic objectives. It was just a means of owning up as management as well as staff on the five strategic objectives that's articulated by the board to us, to say how are we going to implement those. And we implemented this A1C towards an A1CA project as a means to an end in terms of getting those strategic objectives on board. Key priorities in terms of that short to medium term, basically it was to meet ATEL compliance. That's our key mandate, actually, to meet ATEL compliance in terms of the standards. Based on what I said in terms of the legacy, was to address SACA leadership challenge. And the third one was to improve on customer service. Those were the key priorities that we're focusing on as financial aid. Narrowing the skills gap and addressing the skills shortage is not a short-term one. Skills are, in the aviation industry, a global challenge, but we said as an objective, we've got to narrow that, the skills gap, as well as address those skills shortage. Then, a performance management system has to be implemented to create a culture of performance. There wasn't any performance management system in place, so we can implement that, which was actually implemented in this financial year, in the last financial year, 2006-07. To improving of business processes and support systems, you will appreciate that without that, it's very difficult to achieve on any of the others without proper functioning business systems. As it goes, even if you smile to the customer, etc., but if the customer is going to wait 4 or 5 hours for a service, even if you smile, your smile does not matter. So the processes and systems are very important in terms of ensuring that. So those were the short to medium term priorities that we focused on. Long-term plan, we had a 3-year strategy plan that was put in place. So in terms of the 5 strategic objectives, the milestones, and each of them split into the 3-year strategic plan. And then addressing the KO audit findings. We are referring here to in 1999, there was an ATEL audit that was conducted. ATEL is the International Civil Aviation Authority in the country. Each country that forms part of the ATEL, of which we are, has got to be audited at least every 5 years. So we audited in 1999, and the follow-up was in 2001. In that audit, there were a whole lot of deficiencies which we have found, which in 2001 in the follow-up, they were not corrected. So, there was a follow-up audit. In other words, they've got an audit in year one. 2 years later, they come back to figure out if there were corrective action plans that were implemented to correct whatever the findings are. So what I'm saying is that there were no corrective action that were properly implemented to address those findings. So our challenge was to get that up and running and get ready for this ATEL in a short period of time. So the challenge was to get that as quickly as possible in place, because we were notified then that in 2007 there would be an ATEL audit. And in that regard, it was quite a fast-track project to try and correct all those past deficiencies, as well as making sure that all the current standards we are complied with. Normally, in a situation where there have been these deficiencies, it takes almost about 3 years or so to get back to normality if those action plans in terms of corrective deficiencies were not implemented as they were at the appropriate time. But we didn't have any option, but we had to fast track the project to ensure that we were ready for the audit in 2007. So, Sheriff, if I can try and put that on?
Yes.
Where was Allah from the long term plan? And then following on from there, change management is critical in terms of
change management was important to ensure that we the whole organization focuses on the strategic objective. Financial discipline was one of the things that we looked at. Work ethic. One could look at these as almost normal, but I'm saying from where we're coming from, all these things have to be put in place to ensure that it's a well-functioning organization. Financial discipline, work ethic, human capital, personal transformation strategy, which we put in place in support of attracting, developing, and retaining human capital, and being an employer of choice. So we put that in place in terms of the key priorities. The implementation in that respect was the board approved the budget to support our.
Are you guys more comfortable if we give you
5 minutes?
Okay, I'll be very comfortable. Thank you.
You think 5 minutes will do?
We're almost there.
Why is it that you can do it?
again, get it on the screen.
I'm on a board approval and support. The board approved a special budget to address this in September 2006 to address this budget. So a special budget was approved specifically for that, which amongst other things was to ensure that there was recruitment of more skilled personnel. Just a very conservative view, we had to recruit at that stage, our estimate, about 70 technical personnel, which meant a whole lot of, we needed a special approval of the budget to ensure that we were ready for ICAO. Then, part of that, the board approved the performance management system and its implementation, which was all geared towards ensuring that we all focused in terms of the project at hand, of ensuring that we are ICAO compliant. Then I'll report on each strategic objective, the progress under each of those. In terms of strategic objective one, we had to redesign the organizational structure to ensure that we implemented that particular strategy. It was approved by the board,
the structure as it is, just very briefly at high level, is as it is now. Basically, I'm focusing on the technical areas, not necessarily on the support. This is general manager aviation security, and this is embedded investigations who are supposed to be independent from us because they investigate incidents and accidents, and they got to, in terms of the understanding of the ICAO standards, not necessarily to for purposes of litigation, etc., but basically for purposes of preventing any occurrence. Then we've got SFT operations there. SFT operations is about flight ops, checking the airworthiness of the aircraft, certification of the aircraft, licensing standards, the SFT operations. Then executive aircraft is part of that, which is more about the aircraft registration, certification, as well as airworthiness. I said I was just focusing on the main technical areas. SFT infrastructure is about the airport, and navigation services, etc. The others are more on, are more supportive, more than the actual technical. In terms of trying to make sure that the SFT investigation is independent, there is a SFT board committee which deals with SFT investigation. In other words, the UN investigation, they don't report to the CEO, they go to the safety board committee to say this is what was found. But in any way, the safety board committee do not have any influence on the outcome of this, except to ensure that the document quality assurance is okay in terms of that. And it meets the process of a chain in terms of reporting on that. If we're going to get to the findings, it was also a finding in that which the department is looking at, to say in terms of the global threat, FAT investigations are standalone entities on their own. They are not departments or divisions within an entity. So, in terms of what the structure that the department will come up with, that will be taken into account, I believe, in terms of the accident investigation, which deals with all the other areas, the investigation, rail, etc., etc. But as it is now, our attempt of making them independent is to report not to the CEO but to the safety committee in terms of quality assurance.
Sure. Again, it's obviously a critical area. They are currently employees of CAA, that is the investigation team, but their reporting line is to the sport. So that's the thing. But the future might be different. That's what you're saying. And that's a departmental, it's about the transport. How large is that team of managers, roughly?
Of the
Yeah.
The team is 21 investigators with
the
exam. Right. Thank you. Obviously, the department pays for their services. It's just the service rendering to the department because it's not the responsibility of the department in terms of accident investigation. So it's not the industry that pays for that. But those are the budgetary issues that will be that we're dealing with the department in that respect. But the department pays for asset investigation. The Civil Aviation Authority is user pay system, uses the user pay system. So all other functions are not through the treasury, are funded by the industry, the user pay system.
And asset investigations are both post incident and post accident, as well as ongoing examination of aircraft, or is that a separate function?
No, they only investigate.
So they investigate after an accident.
So they come after the incident.
Yeah.
In terms of the preventive measures are by the Civil Aviation Authority, as well as the control and the promotion of safety itself. That's the core function of the Civil Aviation Authority. They're investigating serious incidents,
right,
as well as the still on objective one, safety and security oversight. This was conducted in the operational areas. with the view of addressing of most of the new archaeophiles. We have to introduce and implement a whole lot of new guidance material, technical guidance material. This is critical because that guides the staff in terms of what needs to be done, and that guides the industry, and that is a requirement of the standard in terms of having that. Increased technical personnel, managed to recruit, this is last financial year, the recruitment is still ongoing. 41 of the 70 technical personnel that you identified in terms of increasing the capacity to conduct the mission. And that's the non-technical, the strategic competition of NTCA, which is about the general aviation, which is the smaller aircraft part of things. We did put this together, and aviation medicine strategy was formulated as well. And then we developed a surveillance program, which will ensure that we do survey, we do proper surveillance, and then we do a proper resolution of safety concerns after proper doing proper surveillance. Then the aircraft register is to be a cleanup project that more looked at as operational, but that's a cleanup project which we have to do to ensure that this, what we have on register, because what happens is the aircraft, mostly on the smaller general aviation aircraft, if the aircraft is destroyed for whatever reason, it is incumbent on the owner to come and report that, which is a system that must be looked at, because if we found, in terms of the regulations, we cannot write it off our register until the owner comes. And if the owner is perished, then it becomes a bit of an issue. But we're trying to address that. So if you know that the aircraft has been involved in an accident, it is no longer on the register, you must clean it up, because this is for implications of what we do in terms of our aircraft. So we did the project to clean up the register. General Accident Review Committee, that's the review committee that has, whenever an accident investigator goes out there, the report goes to a review committee to just for purpose of due diligence to ensure that the process is set. 16 times during the year, a total of 9 accident reports were approved and 154 safety recommendations reported to Civil Aviation Authority for implementation. That's what the SAT investigation do. Find something, then they recommend to the Civil Aviation Authority, and the Civil Aviation Authority engages with that. Whatever is implementable, they implement. Whatever they are not agreeing with, it will depend on the issue at hand. The SAT investigation again obtained an ecosystem. Ecosystem is a group, is a chaos group system of reporting accidents, which ensures that we report accidents to the global community as well. If there's something that happened in South Africa, the global community must know about it. So that's the system that we put in place to ensure that we comply with that. In terms of accidents, just as a comparison of where we're coming from and where we are now, what we do is we look at the total aircraft register, and we look at the total accidents, and we take a percentage of that. Normally, if the system allows us to do that, we'll be looking at the air traffic movement. Because if you look at the aircraft register, an aircraft that is parked is not going to commit any, is not going to be involved in any accident. But that's the measure which is statistically accepted. So we're looking at the aircraft register, total accident, the percentage of accidents, and the percentage of the register. In other words, we give you a bit of a feed, because if another country has got 100 aircraft on their register and they didn't have maybe that one accident, it has to be statistically compared with us who are at 9,000 and a half or so in terms of our aircraft register. So, in terms of the aircraft register, you see a downward trend up to 178, slightly more than last year in terms of the percentages of accidents in relation to the aircraft register. 174 accidents, 9,782 aircraft in terms of the register. Total number of fatal accidents, out of that, there were 50 accidents of which, there were 174 accidents of which 29 were fatal. Out of that, there were 50 number of fatalities. But to highlight this refers to general aviation. If I say general aviation, I'm looking at the smaller aircraft, less than 5,700 kg. That's what we're talking about. In South Africa, we've never had any major accidents in terms of the actual bigger aircraft, like a plane, the one that each and every public uses. These are private aircraft, which some out there will have an aircraft, and two of them fly, and not used to flying, etc., and then something happens, and that's what happens. So 50% of our aircraft register, the aircraft register, is of general aviation, which is those smaller aircraft. So it's worldwide, mostly that portion of the industry is not regulated that much. In fact, in South Africa, we are ahead of the world in terms of regulating, which the industry sometimes is a problem with, but we do that because we feel if 50% of our aircraft registered is general aviation, and that's where the accidents are, so we have to try to control that environment. But worldwide, it's not a very controlled environment. The focus is only on the major aircraft.
Now you said that, but maybe it should be the sort of thing that is said, that is said in the document itself. It's important that it's said it, but it's important to say it. And maybe even a bit of a profile of what kind of light aircraft are tending and so on. So essentially what I'm saying is if I'm looking at the larger aircraft, it's not the incidents, but not accidents. And no fatalities. And I think from a public point of view, and therefore from a parliamentary point of view, it's important to say these things. Which you realize, which is why you said it, but I think in the reporting itself, I think. Not also to say we don't give a damn about general aviation, because if there are problems, then obviously it's also important to say that and to think how we need to. Thank you. Another thanks for that.
The type
of
written in the format of the draft, which is still here, the photo, on the vehicle accident, and on these are the years in which the test and aircraft register. Basically, the first slide that I presented, but now in a this is the key aircraft accident there, and it is compared with aircraft from South African data. So this is aircraft accident. So you can see the graph is started at that, and now the register is there, but the accidents are below the register. So the representation in terms of the increase in the aircraft register, number of aircraft. If the data score was engaged, it means an increase also in the accident. So this is just a reflection of the tendency on the this is a comparison that we're doing to compare the accident with that. What causes accidents, basically, in the main? In the main, accidents are more from within factors, more human factors. And that's what the 2006 basically. I think pilots fly two factors, which is human factors. We don't normally have any human factors. Someone tells us that it could be a tower, could be anything. But human factors. 107 fought and 175. 117 fought back is human factors. And then 25 to the mechanical. There are other. So those are the two main contributing factors in terms of human factor. Mechanical follows very low most human factors. So which means our focus in terms of risk management should be only on the human factor. This is the same graph that we still on objective number one, which is our main in terms of civil aviation and security, part of the preparation for getting things back, getting things right, following words from the since the beginning of this, as a means to ensure that there is food for the people in the city. That's mainly our focus in terms of this. In this regard, we've got a growth, a vision, a way to that where CAA with other players in the industry come together and go up and out this problem to other areas, up all areas throughout the country, provinces, to have sessions of interaction with good people for the employees to go up. They are aware that the careers is out there and special with a certain person, very important in future generation perspective of what we do. And like I said, we went through all these areas, Northwest, Pacific, South Pacific, and those are the areas that we also support of SIVA-related projects, which we mostly in our proper social investment projects. We use our resources to support. Not mainly, not so much more on the huge budget, but more on our resources, hard resources to go into areas and support the county's organization. And on the project of Justice 2, which is about promoting and industry funding, we entered into agreement with Ellen in terms of skilling and spirit to make sure that the skilling of our people, Sakai Inspector, is flying to some of the airlines, after which the Sakai Security Bureau can come back and conduct the issue that we should be doing. The issue with this is if you do not fly, you do not have the right to challenge, and the inspector is going to have the time back and say, what is that? So we have decided to do a community to that. See, it's a big area that we can get involved in this. In the future, for example, the generation of partnerships for developing skills. Julian Inspectors are also seconded to airlines to create a game of the flying experience. Not to note that training in private is not very expensive. It has to do simulated training with 150,000 just to do the training in the special. So it's quite an expensive one. So, without any cooperation with the industry, we cannot attain those things. MOU with CETA is an MOU with CETA to ensure that they support our program with regard to training.
All right.
Yeah, they do. Sorry to do more. We can get with them in terms of more projects, I'm sure, but corporate governance, board advice, board members, plan exec, who will come to speak with the CEO. The board can expire end of May 2008, and every bullet for 2008. And in terms of the corporate governance, all things meeting to a health. Board committees, finance and finance committee, SR, women and women committee, safety committee, all four committees were held in this. Despite what plan is back, even if board members are not part of the committee, but they do attend by the decision, we tend to also number because we are a small board. Financial discipline, there was lack of control, especially with regard to the international carpet situation. The nature of the industry did not avoid international transportation to control. So we still then have an example of financial discipline in terms of controlling the services in the organization. Slightly objective point about customer satisfaction. Some of the things that happened during the year, the aviation committee wanted to see the aviation authority. Previously, it was a lot of facilities and M and R, etc., but the message being on the same side of the fence, we all are visiting the society. So, that's what we're different roles to play. So, we're trying to get that partnership going with the industry. They invited us, the developers us, and the roles of interaction with the industry. We've got an industry liaison forum where the application meets and admission in terms of what happens actually as part of the outreach in terms of the participation. see that from the UK, what we send out for information purposes and the website is working well related to that. And we are working on the customer relationship management system to make sure that we capture all the queries we have in the currently. We do capture the components, the complaints, etc., but we want a proper system that will ensure that we measure our how we do with customer service. The first of this part, which is about human capital affecting the training of the work, is implemented the performance limit of the system. That's it, the current culture of performance among employees. Maybe we're talking about employee offshore. Under the pressure of this part, we developed a sub-service of key objectives of key performance failures underneath that. One thing is the development of the HR business partner mindset. HR is not only about being most profitable of me, although that is important, but it's about HR understanding the business sector that can be closer to the division and companies. Given the purpose of information systems, because without proper data, we cannot manage, and that is very important because of the strategy that we have. That commission and change management framework is not only a short-term one, but there are milestones in between. We started with key performance areas under seven key performance areas under first and first five. Then, what are the HR governance framework, policies and procedures that we can review those to make sure that they are in best practice, etc. And then, people talent management is very important. And development and partnering, that's where we're going to pursue further. After our project of what we are doing now in terms of the future plan, it's very critical for the future. Not only for the medium, but for the future, very critical. Talent management is the development of the country. Transitional service, that's a transition between HR and security. And that's it, the employee relations, the non-material relations, not only with the union, but in general, throughout the organization. So those are the seven key performance areas under the strategy of taking pride, which is attacking, developing, and sustaining the union community. In terms of financial review, these are key extracts from the financial results and our report that is available. Deficit is 5.5 million compared with 5.3 million last year. But as I said, there was a special budget approved to address the full-time group UBS, and as a result of that, the policy of catching up that needs to be done. Therefore, it was not unexpected as we know it. In actual fact, the expected deficit of the year is 25. And that's again, we went to Treasury, because the dependency were not allowed to budget for the system. So we went to Treasury to get the approval which was obtained, because it was made hit into our reserve to finance that particular project. So we hit into our reserve, in terms of the cash was there from the reserve, but operationally came up as a technical people's expected. As I said, so we keep on 2A1 projects, labor costs, infrastructure costs, service and maintenance, which means when you increase that, what we see is the office space, etc. So that's the result of the work. In terms of the audit report, the grade will be in the year and the qualified audit report in the previous year. Hard work that resulted in the qualified audit report. I don't know how to do it. In terms of income statement, this year versus last year, it has presented itself. In terms of revenue, was 150 million versus 1 million last year, so increase in revenue. This is revenue coming from the new locations to the existing amount. And then different expenses that resulted in a loss of 11.8 before inflation. And then the final bottom line was a loss of 5.5. And you look at employee benefit expenses, the first one is 105. Because mainly our main expense is about human capital, but we had our figures through in the system. Then the income statement, which is contained in the annual report, mainly that of the balance sheet. more to highlight that due to the investment we planned last year, we had 66 investments in there. Then I said about liquidating our investments to meet our projects, so you can see them with our investments. They do the underlying assets now, and also the assets, because we liquidated some of those, and we had to use them to fund the project for pretty much the whole program. So that was the balance sheet. The organization was exposed to a whole lot of projects from last year up to now. That's why when I came on board was the fact that I just came at the end of the financial year, last financial year, so there was a financial project. And then there was an ACEO security project. ACEO conducted in July, August. And the answer came was positive in terms of ACEO. We will show the graph now because the capability is being compared with other countries that are advancing aviation. We have an ISO audit, which is more showing that we're ISO compliant. All these audits that we're keeping prepared for, that keep coming in, not a normal business, not normal business, but we have prepared for this. And an indication of how business we were from the financial year, from last year up to now. And we maintain our status of ISO 9001. For 3 years certificate that we've changed. Then, CSA, the 2007, this is the American Security Audit, the same audit they have, and they confirmed that we are on par, which is the national standard. So CSA, being the security...
CSA, being the security arm of the state, came and audited us last year as well. ACEO Universal Safety Oversight Audit Program, that's USOP, which is Universal Safety Oversight Audit Program, was in July, so the 14 day audit. Are we going to go to the next slide to ensure that the results were quite encouraging? Doesn't mean we must correct our orders, but it means we still have to correct whatever decisions we found, but it was positive. FAA EASA was in August, the preliminary audit. Come up, but we are doing corrective action plan now, and we will be coming back 1922 to figure out how we've done our corrective action plan in terms of the audit. So that we understand what we're talking about in terms of a safety oversight system, there are 8 critical elements that we're talking about here. Let me put them all up. There are 8 critical elements of this. And those eight critical elements, the first 5 are to establish an effective oversight system. And the last 3 is how you implement it. So each and every country globally is being assessed on their ACEO compliance, they use this system. One being is legislation. How is your legislation foundation in terms of the country in support of an effective oversight system? 2, regulation. This go hand in hand. How is your regulatory environment in terms of ensuring the effective oversight system? 3, is organizational structure. How is the organizational structure? That it is independent, it's small, can make decisions as quickly as it can, and it's following best practice in terms of what is expected of an effective organization. The 3. 4, the technical staff, the qualification and the training. We have technical staff that are qualified. We have an effective oversight system. And 5, we have sufficient, adequate, appropriate technical guidance material and tools to let form the establishment of effective oversight system. On the implementation side, the licensing certification, approval, how you do that. And 7, continuous surveillance, how you put it, continuous surveillance, oversight over the system. And then if you find issues, how you resolve them as quickly as possible. So those are the 8 critical elements of any safety oversight system. Looking at that, we are looking at the ACEO audit, which was conducted in July, and we are looking at our compliance. On the vertical axis, our compliance in terms of percentage, and the horizontal axis are the 8 critical elements. So, PQ stands for protocol question. They have got 9 976
protocol questions that they ask of 600, of which each one can yield about 2 findings, which means potentially they're doing absolutely nothing. You could have 1,962 findings. And that's how they assess the country. So on that, if you look at the first 5, you see that establishment, the physical element that I get to, and on first 5, in the 70s, not reaching 80, you say average, maybe 75 or so, the first 5. On the last 3, which is the implementation, you can see the licensing, the first 5 was quite high, so we did well above 80 on the critical element of effectiveness. On the implementation side, which is licensing, which is a surveillance obligation and resolution system. So basically that's the archaic. How would you, in comparison with other countries, let's look at other countries, but archaic, first graph was positively measuring how you perform. In other words, if you were 100%, no findings would be 100%. But ACEL doesn't measure it in that respect. They measure the lack of effective implementation. So, in terms of this graph, the closer you are to the zero, the better you are. Lack of, the closer you are to the zero. Okay, eight critical elements is the percentage of non-compliance. All right, that is the global coverage. Globally, this is the line of global coverage. This is the line. It shows it's roughly about 40%. And if you can notice here, qualified technical personnel, high up there, about 50. Lack of non-compliance. So, it tells you, globally, there's an issue with regard to qualified technical personnel. Compared with other countries, which just pick a couple of those. Actually, ACEO has said 18 annexes that they use for overseeing all the countries. This audit is comprehensive in that the audit are on 16 of those, excluding facilitation, management, and security. You don't do that for the particular sector. So the audit are on all 16 annexes. Germany, that's the line for Germany in terms of remember, after the audit, after all the final documents have been quality assured and agreed upon, they are on the website, so the other countries can see the top three pictures up from the website. They are there. And New Zealand, everything below 20 is doing quite well. Everything is below 20 there, which means they are over 80% compliant. Malaysia. In Malaysia line, going up the way, and then Italy, going, what is the technical guidance, not too good, but this is South Africa, then the other is Malaysia and the one. So I told you that we are just amongst the other countries which are advanced in aviation in terms of that. Not a failure. Satisfied with that, still have got to do much. Basically, I think New Zealand is a good barometer to say possible to be everything below 20, that means to be above 80 on every condition every aspect. So that's how the ACEO compliance came about. Here, just looking to critical factor structures, because the last increases were last in 1999, in 2004, we had to increase the tariff. So consultation was within the three districts. The minister has approved that now. It's going to be implemented so that we ensure that the proper safety oversight can tariff increases. One of the critical factor structures, otherwise we have no money to do what we're supposed to do. The recruitment drive, I spoke about this. Still talking about critical sectors, and some indications that the sufficient qualified and experienced technical personnel, we know about that. So we're continuously recruiting to what is the challenge in that
higher demand, and the problem in terms of salaries as well, getting these people on board. Industry has been, we tap into the industry. Some of our operators have had, when we need them for 2 days a week, we just employ them for 2 days a week as opposed to being permanent. But not very healthy in that regard. We need to have permanent staff on board. But just to close the gap, part of what we do. Structural conflict, that's the issue. The structural conflict in terms of the commissioner CEO issue, the dealing with the commissioner, which was something that came about when the 1998 with the Civil Aviation Authority Act was implemented, but being addressed in terms of making sure that we are in line with the standards in that regard. That the proper of one authority in terms of safety oversight. SAP investigations have highlighted that they are politically independent, and the department will be working on that one. And then there's a third thing that is dealing with the separation of roles between SACA, Office of the Chief, Civil Aviation Authority as well, as well as Commissioner and the CEO. Customer satisfaction, we said that is one of the critical success factors. We're going to put the customer satisfaction index in which we're going to measure our base, and from there on, annually, we're going to measure our customer satisfaction from there. Then lastly, just have a view of our recent aviation incident, just a picture of that, which is not contained in the presentation. Three incidents that took place now, as you will appreciate, aviation attracts attention for any incident that takes place. But the fact of the matter is aviation, when we exclude escalators in the state, air traffic and the safety, excluding escalators. That's the fact. There was an aircraft incident in Cape Town, and there was a nationwide aircraft incident in Cape Town Central Airport, in Kulula, aircraft incident in Forest Campo International Airport. The first incident was an FAA aircraft, which landed safely normally. But in terms of maneuvering, when it was on the ground, which could not have resulted in any fatality or anything, but maneuvering, it ended up in a muddy sort of place and was stuck in there. So it was an issue in terms of how it was maneuvered to land there. But it was already on the ground, it had landed safely, and that was from our side. We couldn't allow the aircraft to fly from once it was taken out of that where it was stuck to fly. We trusted the back to go back as a so it was returned to service, flying only with the crew, and then they land just to check the landing gear, etc. So the purpose of ensuring just a precautionary measure because it had landed safely, but on maneuvering it had landed on the muddy. That was one. The second incident, which was this is quite a serious incident, was nationwide, the Boeing 737-200. Basically, the engine separated from the aircraft during takeoff. And it has got the twin, always has twin engines, which are big as well. So it still flies on one, and the other one. It was still in Cape Town. In reaction to that, well, the aircraft landed safely after that, the pilot maneuver landed safely after that, and then returned to the airport. We issued an airworthiness directive, which we call it AD, just calling for technical inspections of all engine mounting 177-200 and all associated components and pilots. This is a precautionary measure to ensure that if it is something that is just a precautionary measure. So if it is on all 737-200s, then it can be picked up. So we have to ground all of them, they have to be inspected before they could fly back. So they could be second into the roof. 32 of those, we we have in the country are affected, operated nationwide from SAA, Interlink, Intercom. So there were 32 of those that had to be inspected as a precautionary measure, with a specific focus on the engine and mounting at 37. No defects were found in any of those, once it has been inspected and been confirmed, then it can go back into flight once it is inspected in terms of the component of engine. But not the specific one which had an incident, because that one is under investigation, but SAT investigation does not touch anything that has been done. That is, once it is an accident, then accident investigation takes over. That one is still awaiting the outcome of what actually happened on it. All the other, what I'm referring to, that we inspected. After having that experience, we had to look around the world in terms of incidents of this nature. Was it the first one that has ever happened or not? We found that there were 4 similar incidents that have occurred elsewhere in the world. And I'll give you some summary of the occurrences. Similar, when the engine comes out of the aircraft on takeoff. There were 4 of those that happened around the world. 2002 in the US, Delta flight separated. The engine separated from the aircraft during takeoff, no one landed safely. Cause of the incident was world failing to safety. So that was an incident in 2002 in the US. Same aircraft. The manufacturer issued the death air witness directive after that. So all engine mounting, etc., the pilot has to be bolted, etc. But it was due to fatigue. It happened in the US in 2002. 1987, again in the US, aircraft, this is wrong, not so. Passenger didn't see the aircraft, see the engine falling from the passenger saw the engine falling from the aircraft, but the aircraft landed safely again. The cause found that was failing due to that. Third one was again in the US, 1986. Both engine support structure failed at takeoff, and then the second engine separated from the aircraft. And the cause of the incident was engine support structure. Engine support structure, which was 86. And the last one, the Boeing is an American aircraft in the news. US again, 1989, an engine separated from the aircraft during takeoff, but the aircraft continued to climb, and eventually landed safely. Again, similar to the first two, the boards were failing due to fatigue. In our precautionary measure now, as they check the engine, they check out the boards, they have got to not crash the problem on any of the ones that were inspected, but they have got to fit in new boards for safety reasons in terms of what was done on the same tool. No cracks were found on the engine boards, not the engine that were inspected. No, there were no defects. But on taking them out, they have got to fit new ones. So that was part of the precautionary measure that we took in terms of ensuring that it is tight. As you can see on the first three ones, mainly due to fatigue, that's been the case. We don't know what the outcome of this will be, but so this incident will happen before and... The latest one being 2002.
The latest one was 2002.
Then the third incident was Kulula. The aircraft experienced engine problems whilst in flight, but the pilot opted to return to the precautionary manner to the airport, and he landed safely back and being inspected in terms of what caused the particular engine problem. Our view on the incident, just to summarize, say
we believe that the incidents are isolated and they are not necessarily unique to the South African environment, as I've indicated in the past. But we can learn from other regulators pertaining to how they dealt with this incident. Specifically, the action that we took, the similar action that the U.S. took in terms of grounding those aircraft and making sure that they are checked, the engines are checked, the pylons, etc., are properly checked. We took similar action as a precautionary measure. And then we have put our inspectors on high alert in terms of readiness to make sure that they are upping their surveillance, to make sure airworthiness is high on their agenda. So the visibility of inspectors is also important, and airline maintenance operation, the air maintenance organization is the one that we inspect, for each and every airline will have an air maintenance organization that maintains the aircraft. So it's important that that maintenance organization maintains all the standards. So oversight, we inspect those to ensure that they keep up to the standards. Then I'm concluding to say we have many projects to manage in the financial year, with 5 external audits and the implementation of new systems. This contributed to improvement of SACA, but we still have got some work to do in terms of making sure that we're up to well standards and in terms of our vision of the excellent implementation. So basically, that's how I am.
Thank you very much.
All right. Let's open it up then to Arikas and Chabra Singh. I'm working on Lenny.
Thank you, Chaperson, and thanks for the presentation. I realized that maybe it's a break for the teacher because she wanted to address the painting and all that. But, you know, I have so many questions, but I wanted to concentrate on the last part. The incident. Especially because they were not part of what you have given us. What is disturbing? When you look into your mission, you say it's a pair of international arena that seeks to promote and maintain safe and secure civil aviation environment in South Africa. By overseeing and all that. But my problem is you had to wait for incidents for you to inspect engines. When you were starting with your presentation, you kept on, I think you emphasized this. In other words, you don't have a disaster management plan. I don't know, I might be wrong with my, you know, this type of conclusion. I might be wrong, but it means that you wait for incidents to happen for you to check the engines, which is quite disturbing. And if your primary objective is to make sure that the aircraft are safe for all South Africans, why do you have to wait for that? I think I'll come to the others, but I wanted to concentrate on that. And it's all aircraft because you certificate them, you give them certificates and regulate them and all that. And if they have to comply with ISO 9001 standards, why do we have a problem with the bolts that are not tightened up to ensure safety? Thank you,
Chairperson. Yes, thanks, Chairperson. I'm really also worried that I think in terms of their annual report, there is an indication that they have not done all the inspections, and some of the inspections that were supposed to be done, they have been cancelled by the stakeholders themselves, and then they could not do the inspection. Now, I'm actually linking this now with this particular incident that we have experienced. The question now that arises is, when did the Civil Aviation Authority learn about the previous four incidents that have occurred? Is it after this particular incident that has happened that we have found out that four similar incidents happened? Or did we know in the past? If we have known in the past that these four incidents happened, then what sort of precautionary or even forming a routine maintenance and or inspection program to actually ensure that this similar thing doesn't happen and we learn from the previous incident? The other question, Chairperson, that I just wanted to raise is, because from the previous four incidents that have occurred, it has been established that one of the problems has been a failure of mounting bolts and the rest on the engines. Why have we then decided only to concentrate on the Boeing 737-200? Because that problem then can, it can be applicable on other aircraft. Why have we specifically just concentrate on those one and then leave the rest? Thank you, Chairman.
Okay. I want to check
this benchmark on the Israel aviation security. What has from that the Israel? I just want to check whether what from that actually, whether is there a lot of aircraft that are landing in Israel? There are lots of tourists that are going to Israel rather than any other country. I just want to check.
Is that appearing in the annual report? Not in the
presentation. In the annual report, yeah. Okay. And I just want to check what are the influence for concentrating in taking the aviation security to Israel rather than any other country? And I just want to check that.
I'm not so sure that it's the aviation of aircraft, but I just want to ask about the runway, the airport. That's how many runway, because you put only one runway. If the 346, that flight will cause the problem, can stuck in the runway, and the flight from maybe all the airports can't land, can't fly out, because maybe there's the one runway. There's no other way that maybe you can have another runway if there's a problem in the runway. The other flight, which are from other airports, can land, because there was a problem that they can't land, they can't fly out. That's all.
I won't be answering any questions. However, I just want to give a little bit of perspective and a bit of background. The Boeing 737 is one of the most successful aircraft ever manufactured. There are currently over 1,000 of them flying today. Africa is the biggest user of these aircraft. And if you look at the number of incidents. Now we're talking about 5 out of over 1,000 aircraft. That's 5 million of miles a day. We believe that this is an isolated incident. And if I were just to give an example, why are we reacting after the effect? I'd like to just cite an example with vehicles. You've heard of vehicles of a certain make being recalled for modification because something has happened. Okay? What happens is the authority works in conjunction with other authorities of the world, including the manufacturers. We cannot claim that we understand the aircraft better than the manufacturer. So the manufacturer will be the one that has a reputation to maintain to make sure that all safety precautions are taken. All incidences all over the world that happen, they get copies of that information, and they have specific departments.
department that actually monitors all this and decides whether action should be taken. But as a country, when an incident happens within our backyard, we have to do something. We have 32 of these aircraft flying, and we have to, just to make sure, because sometimes you find that it could be an environmental issue rather than a global. Maybe corrosion is higher in certain places in South Africa. Maybe the aircraft was parked there. So we said, just to be safe, let us check it. But if the manufacturer was concerned, he would have grounded all of them globally if there was a very serious concern. All of the service system would have been grounded globally to make sure certain corrective measures are taken. That is one aspect. Now, let's talk about the 737-200 specifically in South Africa. I know that there were questions asked whether is South Africa a dumping ground. I think these issues were questions that I'm raised, but is South Africa a dumping ground of obsolete aircraft? So that's why we're having this kind of accidents. Now, I'd like to emphasize that the Boeing 737-200 aircraft cannot be imported anymore into South Africa. Am I correct? You cannot import anymore to register a Boeing 737-200 into the country. These are the aircraft that were brought in before we put the cargo bay. A certain, we call them chapter, we look at the noise pollution and all that. We say aircraft up to a certain chapter cannot be registered in South Africa. So I'm just emphasizing that even the 737-200, if you were to go buy it somewhere and want to register it in South Africa, you will not be allowed to.
Okay, just on that point,
yes.
Why are people now...
No, it's not you, it's been there.
Yes, that's why.
Because, specifically on noise pollution. Yes.
Okay, so it's not a safety issue.
No, it's not a safety issue. It's mostly making a certain noise.
It's a newer generation aircraft.
Yes.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, there's
yeah.
I think this is chapter 2. And if I'm not mistaken, for chapter 3, there's a white paper already, which already we're addressing that, for even more stringent noise. And I think that was the best of the background now. Maybe.
Thank you. The first question was on incident in terms of our mission and whether we are reactive rather than proactive. I think we are more proactive than reactive. As I indicated, the only, and that is well standard, the only division that is reactive in terms of investigation after the event is SAC investigation. That is one department that deals with that. Also, does that with the view of preventing any reoccurrence of what has been established and making certain recommendations for the future. But with regards to us, the only it's not about being reactive. All we did was a precautionary measure to say, if that happens, let us see. Because just imagine if that happened and then the day after another 737, the same issue happened, maybe there will be a disaster with fatalities. So it was a precautionary measure, which is a well standard to say, if something happens, immediate steps must be taken to ensure that you, whatever the responsible authority, what steps have been taken after establishing something. That does not necessarily mean that we do not carry our normal oversight function. Our normal oversight function, we issue a certificate of airworthiness based on certain inspections that are conducted. And every year, these are renewed based on inspection. But that inspection says that your aircraft is airworthy, provided that you comply with the maintenance program as prescribed by the manufacturer. So, airworthiness is at that point in time provided that you comply. And then, at intervals, an audit is not a day-to-day. The operator has to take certain responsibility of its safety as well. It's supposed to do that. An audit is an audit, and it's not necessarily every day that's going to be there. But in terms of the programs of what we have to do, we do that. We do the inspections. We do the inspections on the air maintenance organizations, which are critical in terms of maintaining these aircraft. If the air maintenance organization is not up to standard, then the license is not renewed. Or if it's found during ad hoc inspection that is not up to standard, then its license is revoked. And those are the precautionary measures that get taken. Just repeat, in this instance, it was just a precautionary measure, which is the responsible authority of the state to ensure that all the others are inspected at the same time.
Okay, just so we understand better, I mean, these are not hostile questions. These are questions to try, I think, to understand CAA's specific role, and also bearing in mind that the airline operators and the airline manufacturers have a great deal of reason to be very careful themselves, although I'll come back, because we'll come back to that issue sometime in a moment. But just so we're clear, okay, there's a reactive, the investigative unit is obviously one that then investigates incidents, therefore it has a reactive role. But as you said, the bulk of your work is proactive, as so to speak. But we're a little bit unclear, or at least I am, and maybe other members are, what exactly that proactive work is. Now, so the certificates that you issue, I mean, you're obviously not, I'm assuming, going around inspecting every bolt on every aircraft. It's not practical, and hopefully someone else is doing that. But what are you primarily checking that there is a effective schedule of maintenance? That's really certain. It's almost paperwork more than physical work of tapping around on an aircraft or something, checking on the metal fatigue. Is that a correct understanding of the role, the proactive role that you're playing?
That's correct.
So it's essentially ensuring you.
It is, yes, you're correct, that there is a protocol of checks that have to be done, which differ from aircraft to aircraft, which are recommended, and we prescribe by the manufacturer, we prescribe as mandatory. However, over and above that, the inspectors do ad hoc inspection of certain parts of the aircraft without announcing. For instance, they could show up at the maintenance base and unannounced, and just do, maybe an aircraft is undergoing a specific major check, and they could actually just unannounced show up and actually do an ad hoc inspection on the metal itself. But you're correct, the fundamentals is to make sure that the process is in place.
Yes.
Okay,
now, there's a reference that we could at least one of the
well, if whilst he's still finding it, if I may just also give some further input, there are two licenses that are given an operator, an airline. One is an airline operating certificate, which looks holistically at the company, that accountable people, because they have to be accountable people within the authority, the airline, are in place. There are no vacancies, and they check the aircraft and the crew and everything to give an airline operating certificate. This is renewed annually. That is that each aircraft, especially commercial aircraft, individually has its own certificate of airworthiness, which is also renewed annually. So these are combined together. No. We only regulate the airline. We only issue aircraft operating certificates for the airlines which are registered in South Africa on our registry.
There are a number of follow-ups on this matter. We're coming to a whole new round.
Yes, and if I say something, yes, I wanted to know as to what is the earth to
the maintenance staff. Is it possible, or it is their normal thing to
check all the planes whenever they arrive and depart from the airport, whether they are in good condition.
What the chairperson is actually saying is that as a manufacturer, let's say you are kind of a nationwide manufacturer, and there's a safety, they have their own inspection sheets and all that. So, and you as CAA have to make sure that they comply with, and that the plane is safe and everything else. When that happens, do you look into, besides your own inspection as an institution, you also look into their own file of inspections, how they are doing their inspection, and is that what you are saying? What you, maybe, I didn't understand the question.
You're correct, madam. You're correct. If I may just go a little bit deeper into the technical arena to answer also your question. Each aircraft has a log. It's got a history. Now, each engine has its own history. And the aircraft also has a logbook. What happens is, after every flight, the pilot, the captain, if he picked up a technical snag, he snags it in there, and that aircraft has to be rectified before it can do another mission. Sometimes it's in between flights, sometimes it's at the end of the flight. Now, what happens is there are some snags which are acceptable in terms of safety to fly with, but with a time limitation that you can fly somewhere, but you will have to fix it after so much time. Those are prescribed by the authority. So I'll give you now, you bring in an aircraft into South Africa and you want to register it in South Africa. You will have to apply to the authority that I would like to introduce this minimum equipment list of this aircraft. And then the authority will start it with an unacceptable, you're pushing the envelope here, because, you know, we have to balance, there are commercial considerations. We are the authority to put the safety back into its arena. So you will apply and say, I would like to fly my aircraft with these minimum equipment lists, which means if one part is, one unit is unacceptable, I can use fly with another one. And then we have to then say, no, you have to have both of them acceptable. And then once that is decided by the authority, then as you as an operator, you cannot deviate from that list. The pilot cannot deviate from that list. If they do, they're in breach of the authority's regulations, they're endangering their own licenses, and if we ground them, take their licenses, they lose their livelihood. So there are mechanisms to make sure that the risks are controlled, you know, the safety is managed.
Maybe just to add,
I'm not sure. Maybe we may have interrupted them in answering the questions that I've requested. In the name of proactiveness, I have just requested clarity that the four incidents that have occurred, have we learned anything that could have prevented what has happened, or we have unfortunately learned of these four incidents that have happened after this particular incident? Then one will be now asking, what sort of linkages with other civil aviation authorities in the U.S. that would have helped us to actually know this particular incident beforehand? And probably in our scheduled inspections, we could have actually avoided this situation. But like as I've suggested before, I really want to understand what informs a decision only to check the 737-200 if the previous incidents prove that there is mechanical problems or mounting problems of the engine. Because that is actually across all aircraft. It can't be only on 737-200. But what informs them to take a decision to only check the 737 and not the other one. I need clarity on this particular issue because we are creating havoc on the people out there. People are now afraid, or they will end up being afraid of flying, because we must clear this matter to the public so that we restore confidence in the aircraft operators. Thanks, sir.
No, I just want to say one must admit that this is not a very easy industry to manage, in my view. And also I want to acknowledge that also I think that if you take the number of accidents that have happened, you know, as compared to the number of airlines that are there, in my view, I think the accidents are fairly low. I'm not saying they're good, but I think they are fairly low. And yeah, that's what I think. But having said that, I wanted to check with the civil aviation. You know, after all this accident story, how do you people measure your performance? Whether you're doing good or bad? What tool do you use for measuring your performance?
Thank you. I just wanted to add to what the chair was saying in terms of, again, on the proactive measures that one takes. Each airline will have a maintenance organization, a top maintenance organization which is tasked with maintaining that aircraft, their aircraft. And there are stringent measures that are taken to inspect those maintenance organizations. In other words, if they do not meet the standard, because you rely on the maintenance organization in order to ensure that the standards are met. If they don't meet the standards, their licenses get revoked. Basically, they're out of business because their licenses, if you do not have a license, then you cannot operate. So that's part of the measures that you do in terms of ensuring safety. On the question of why only the 737-200, I think that, like you correctly say, aviation is a global industry. When these incidents took place, the whole world was notified. We belong to ICAO, and our main protective measure is to make sure that we are compliant with ICAO standards, which ensure safety. That's our main measure. So the manufacturer, in conjunction with the authority where the incident took place, they issued an airworthiness directive when those took place. In other words, if there is any issue with this particular mounting, etc., this is what needs to happen. Check this and this and this. And that is what happened. So that was done then, in terms of what happened at the time at which it happened. Our issuing now of the directive was taking that old directive that was issued at the time when these incidents happened today. Let us recheck, just to make sure that we are on top of this precautionary measure. But it has never happened in any other aircraft. So that means we were directing the problem to where directing the solution to where the problem is, rather than just saying all aircraft must be checked. It's where the risk is, because basically I'm not saying commerce is more important than the accident, etc., than the safety. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, if there's no, we cannot hold the economy to a standstill when there is no justification for grounding all the aircraft because of that. If the problem has been ring-fenced to say the possibility, which has not come out yet in terms of the current, could be with this and limited to 737-200. We only grounded those specific aircraft types and not all the aircraft. Only those specific aircraft types, because that's where the directive, where the problem was lying. So it's focused based on the risk, as where the risk is, based on the history as well that we have, based on our interaction with the manufacturer, etc., etc. So it's a practice that is followed globally, and the whole world will know about the incident. In other words, that incident that happened, you're duty bound that we have got to report to ICAO so that the whole world knows about it. In their own environment, if they want to take precautionary measures because of the incident, then they can do that. So that's basically why we focus on the 737-200s and not on the other. Not sure if I can continue with other questions that we have. And then the other issue was on how do we measure our performance. I think our performance is mainly it's focused on ICAO compliance, basically. There are standards which are worldwide that need to be followed, and South Africa is part and parcel of the ICAO convention. Therefore, our standards and our focus is on meeting ICAO standards. Meeting ICAO standards is not for its own means, but it's an international benchmark to ensure that you prevent accidents from happening, or you minimize them from actually happening. So that's how our measurements take place. In other words, when I spoke about the DOT performance agreement that we have with the minister, et cetera, it's based specifically on that. The diagram that I was referring to was just to explain this particular process. That you've got a ICAO convention standards, then you put together civil aviation legislation, which is the foundation for effective oversight system. Based on that, then you set your own standards and you are measured on those, how you comply with those standards. And the effectiveness of those of compliance with those standards will ensure that you minimize accidents. That's basically what the measurement is. Benchmarking with Israel, I think it was just a decision to say at this juncture, including the U.S., Israel, in terms of the political environment there, is very advanced in terms of security systems and how they do their security measures. So, aviation safety as well as aviation security is a global industry. So if there's a country that has got specific systems that you can learn from that you that are more advanced in terms of their risk profile, that you do that. It was only for that reason that there's a specific system that you are using to detect any security issues at the airport, etc. So that was the reason why Israel was visited, not for any other. The other one on one runway, I can't respond adequately on that chair because that is can only respond from a safety perspective and not an infrastructure. ACSA is responsible for the airport infrastructure and they provide that. But from our side, in terms of safety, it's more on the operational side that it will make the airport more efficient if there is more infrastructure. But from a safety point of view, its safety is not compromised. Gatwick, for an example, a big airport, it has got so many air traffic movements. It has twice that of Fort Tambo, but it has got one runway. So from a safety perspective, that's not an issue. It's just the efficiency of the airport that can increase the infrastructure. That's what I can respond to. I think I've addressed all the things.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes, aviation in our country is of world standards, but for an engine to fall out of an aircraft, that is not an incident, it's an accident. For an aircraft to turn the other way, say if it's about to set off, how disastrous can that be? Now, more and more people are making use of our flying nowadays, especially in our country. Much more, it's increasing by the thousands, monthly, almost. Now, if you look at, in Europe, for example, there's certain aircraft from Africa that does not land there. And I assume all aircraft from South Africa do land anywhere in the world. How serious would you right, this accident. You were saying it was incident, but how serious do you rate it? I didn't hear it.
I think it would be irresponsible of us not to have this discussion, first of all, as parliamentarians. But I'm a little bit worried that we mustn't also be driven by headlines. and alarmist talk. Because I think that let's review what we've got in front of us. First of all, congratulations on getting an improved and good ICAO rating. I think that's very important. And it's good to see that we're not, you know, that we're certainly ahead of international standards, the international average in terms of ICAO rating. And the challenges we've got have basically to do with skilled personnel, and that's a big challenge across the board in our country. But it doesn't seem to be a crippling issue. I mean, in other words, we're doing okay, but we could be New Zealand, but no one else is New Zealand, so we also need to bear that in mind. What we've had is one serious incident, I think, and that obviously, in terms of big airlines, and that obviously was the Boeing 737-200 and the engine falling off. Unfortunately, these things happen, and I think that's what you're trying to say to us. And we've been lucky, but hopefully you make luck as well. This is a rare occurrence. Touch wood, that one doesn't want to bring. It's a serious incident, I would think. And one, thankfully, which didn't result in loss of life or injury, for that matter. On the good side, I've not heard anyone congratulate the pilot publicly, but clearly that pilot performed excellently, and that's something else we can be proud of. It's a pity he had to perform excellently in the circumstances, but clearly did. And brought the aircraft down well and so on. So that tells us something also about the skills in our aviation sector. And I think certainly as Parliament we should commend the pilot. Also, I thought that where less commendation is required is I think that nationwide tried to suggest that there was some foreign object that got lodged into it. In other words, it sounded like they were trying to avoid any responsibility ahead of any investigation of the matter. And one would like to congratulate the CA for stepping in and also making public that there was no evidence whatsoever of that. I think you did that quite quickly. And I think that transparency in these matters is very important. Public communication is very, very important. Because naturally, everyone is worried about these things. And I think that we need to set an example of not being obscure or opaque about these matters. If there's a problem, we must say so. And we must communicate transparently. And in my view, the Civil Aviation Authority did that quite quickly. And also did not allow the story to float that there was some foreign object. It may eventually, when the investigation is complete, maybe that will be found to be the case. But and I understand that there will be a progress report, basically a provisional report, interim report that you will get tomorrow. And hopefully we'll make that public, because I think it's important to do that. I don't know what the protocols are on that, but if possible, I think that's important so that there's transparency about these things, so we don't worry about what we don't have to worry about, but we isolate what it is that we do need to worry about insofar and so on. I think that was the potentially very serious, well, it was a serious incident, and I think generally from the report you've given us, the way in which the Civil Aviation Authority has handled the matter was spot on, and also then insisting on grounding all of the other similar aircraft in our country, and just making double sure and replacing the bolts, even though there was no wear and tear in the existing bolt, was the right step to take. A pilot took a wrong turn at Cape Town. Both these things happened as well. Fortunately, it wasn't in the air that it happened, or didn't collide, or whatever. And there, the problem was much more just. It messed up operations and delayed things and so on. It was a minor thing. But again, I think one would want to commend you for saying that notwithstanding the minor nature of the incident, actually what was semi-serious about it was that it delayed a whole lot of flights. But nonetheless, notwithstanding that, you refused SAA permission to fly that aircraft back to Dover with passengers. And we commend you for being, as you say, prioritizing the safety issues above anything else. So tremendous. Then, of course, now we're getting, because you mentioned three incidents, but now there's a fourth one and so on. So the newspapers are obviously on heightened alert, and presumably some of these things are getting reported because passengers are now phoning in the newspapers and so on. So that's fine, it's okay, and we shouldn't be embarrassed about if there's a problem. There's no reason why it should be kept secret, so we're not calling for that at all. But at the same time, I think we must be careful, either from Parliament or from anywhere else, of we must be transparent, we must be absolutely meticulous about safety matters, we must be as international best standard as we can possibly be, but at the same time, we mustn't create panics and a sense that there's a wave of things like that. Having said that, I sincerely hope now that there won't be, of course. But I think that is also part of, otherwise we'll chase off our tails and also fall into a whole Afrofism, which easily happens in our country. Ooh, look what's happening. And even with the implied suggestion that it's, you know, the new lot that are in power. So if that's the case, then we must admit to it and so on. But there's no evidence of that at all. Clearly, I think what the committee is saying, and maybe I'm saying something slightly different from some of my other members, but what we're not saying is be relaxed, things are okay, it's okay, and so on. But at the same time, we are trying to place the thing in perspective, these incidents in perspective, and I think you've helped us to do that, so I'd like to thank you for that. I don't know if you want to add anything to this. But on this matter, then there are a whole lot of other matters which we also need to pick up on the annual report.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, on our annual report, if you could refer to page 25 of the report. The first graph there highlights by schedule operator the number of reported incidents in a year. You will see that the private is the highest, but they are lumped together as one group. But if we were to look at nationwide, they had 18 incidences. Okay, this is not a very good indication because it's dependent on how many sites they have. Okay, they are not very big, so but they have had 18, and SA Express, which is the one that is in case 51, but they are busier than nationwide. But if you can see, it's really 25 incidents reported over 12 months. That's equivalent to 2 per week, per month. I'd like to suggest that it's really, we are really not really compromising at all in safety. I think we are vigorous in maintaining that.
But at the same time, it's very important, I think, to keep clear perspective both ways, mm-hmm. neither to become relaxed nor to become sort of overreactive and panicked. Okay, now let's pick up on other matters. That members, the one thing that the reference, yeah, I think what Lemius said was he was referring to page 36 of the annual report, which was it's under revenue, okay. And it just said all scheduled inspections were performed, as well as extra ad hoc and commissioning inspections, except for client cancellation. And if I'm understanding, but maybe you should explain it, but as I'm understanding it, it doesn't mean you try to inspect someone and they put you off, but are continuing to fly. Presumably they wouldn't get ready for a clearance certificate or something like that. So you're really talking about yourself, that you didn't let down anyone in any is that a correct understanding?
That's a correct understanding. They cannot dictate to the authority when to inspect. However, if the issuing of a specific license, etc., is dependent on a specific inspection being conducted, it's their problem if they're not ready because the license will not be issued. So maybe
the way to put it, like.
Why can't we wage you and not under? Yeah,
correct. Because we charge them for that, yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was looking at the third region. One of the key problems when a particular organization has problems is with personnel. And if they are not satisfied, it becomes a problem. And I'm impressed with the report that you have given us, that you have actually identified the problems, that there was the low employee morale, the dysfunctional of the organization. I'm really impressed because you have to find the causes, before you can actually come up with solutions. You have to find what is the cause. But I wanted to ask you, what was the real cause of this low employee morale? If you say that you are going to attract, develop, and retain skilled human capital, do you have a strategy on doing that? Because most organizations are actually complaining that they cannot retain skills retention, or trying to retain their employees is a serious problem. So I just wanted to find out if you have a strategy as far as that is concerned. And my other question, Chairperson, if you allow me, is on development of surveillance program. Is it in place? Do you have that surveillance program? And the breakdown on your technical personnel. I mean, you have said there the inspectors, engineers, and all that. I'm interested in the breakdown in terms of race and gender. Thank you, Chairperson.
It's also just a follow-up on that one of inspection. The annual report says fewer facilities were inspected due to one of our clients, SAF, having budgetary problems and therefore could only afford fewer inspections. Now, what I want to understand here, Chair, is the implications. 35 of the annual report. Yes, 35. The implications of this particular situation, where you cannot inspect the facilities because your client is not having enough funds to be able to pay, but what is the implication? What happens? Does it still continue and operate? I think I need clarity on this, on this, Chair. Because clients may run away with faulty or non-compliant aircraft or facilities for maintenance because they are not able to finance the CAA to be able to check for this compliance. If they could just explain to me the kind of implications that will arise from this particular shortcoming. Thanks.
Chair, I just want to check around the vacancy rate. What is the percentage of vacancy rate? And when are the CA intending filling these vacancies, and whether there are any adverts that has been issued, and if there's any advert that has been issued, how far is the process of getting people to this post?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the legacy. Low employee morale. So in order to address the problems, we have to first establish the environment scanning and finding out what the issues are. Indeed, that was the case, but it has to be addressed. when I highlighted the HR transformation strategy underneath that, there are seven key performance areas. One of them is talent management, which is a focused strategy on how to retain talent. There will be a lot of activities underneath them, but as I said, in terms of talent management, it's not a one-year deliverable. It's creating an environment that will make sure that you retain the skilled human capital, which is a whole lot of processes that must put together to ensure that the environment is conducive to keep skilled human capital. So it's not a 1 year deliverable. However, it's part and parcel of the HR transformation strategy in terms of talent management. I said our focus was more on the preparation year one, preparation for the ACAO audit, with not significant engagement with the industry in terms of the skills, etc., etc. I said in terms of the phase, the second phase of our deliverable, we'll be engaging more on the skills in terms of the skills, both developing skills, interacting with the, making maybe MOUs with the industry, etc., in terms of where the skill shortages are, pilots, technical assistance personnel, as well as having proper strategies of how to deal with that. That is not without challenge, of course, because we are competing, as I said, with the global community, where salaries are also a big issue. Salaries are also a big issue. So, I'm saying it's a strategy that is not only short term, but it's a strategy that is more medium term with certain milestones that we've got to achieve. Year one mainly was on the core deliverable, like the preparation of the ACAO audit, and thereafter the skilling process, etc., in terms of talent management as a core strategy under human resources will be pursued. That's with regards to retaining personnel. Development of a surveillance program. We had the surveillance program. However, it was not in terms of the audits now. It was not meeting the standards that they required in terms of surveillance. Because the surveillance program, if you keep it simple, it would be to say, on this particular year, we'll be in auditing this particular airline, we'll be auditing this particular maintenance organization on this particular date, etc., etc. But in terms of standards that are set, we had to have a comprehensive surveillance program that ensures, for an example, that if the flight ops inspectors are inspecting at the same time, the airworthiness inspectors go and inspect at the same time. That coordination of those was found to be lacking in terms of the audit. Sometimes airworthiness inspectors are inspecting on one day and others are inspecting on another day and that kind of stuff. So the development of the surveillance program, we've developed that to ensure that it is a consolidated effort where all parties that are contributing towards safety do the inspection in a coordinated fashion. So that was the development of the surveillance program. In terms of breakdown of technical rates and then, I didn't have it in the presentation. We are currently 54% female. We are, white, black, 59 black, 41 white. However, those are actually very good ratios in terms of when you compare to the industry. Those must compare to the industry. However, those will be turned a bit to the negative, if you like, on further recruitment that you are doing, because you are recruiting technical personnel and mostly they're white men. So that will be turned a bit, but that will be addressed down the line in terms of the skilling, etc., etc. That was with that. And in terms of Air Force. This unit is a standalone unit. I think it appears here under stakeholder relations as well. We call it a strategic business unit in itself. It's rendering a service to clients. It's not a safety oversight system. In actual fact, it's not supposed to be under CAA, but historically from the Department of Transport it was inherited, because it has got to be inspected itself by the CAA. It has got an aircraft, part of the 121, large aircraft, so it has to be in operation. What it does in the absence of, we can't have a machine, it calibrates instrument learning systems, etc., in the airport. And airports have got a whole lot of airports. And they are scheduled programs. They are calibrations accordingly. So if the airport says, in terms of this airport, we are not yet, we can do it later on because they allow the time still allows for that, then we cannot be forced into doing that, unless the time that is arrived for it to be actually inspected. So it is within their control to say this airport can be inspected within, say, 6 months period, can be calibrated at a specific point in time. So this is more of a revenue explaining issue, which is a strategic business unit that is supposed to be self-sufficient. And it was also, in terms of the investigation we're doing, figured out that it is not self-sufficient, so we increase the fees to ensure that it is self-sufficient because it's supposed to be a standalone unit. So this is not an effort, but under normal circumstances, and ATS doesn't want to take it over. We are saying ATS must take it over, but historically we're just having it as a separate unit on its own. On the vacancy rate, if you could be 3 weeks, 2 weeks ago in the Sunday Times and all the papers, including international websites and aviation magazines, etc., we advertised for these technical positions. Like I said earlier, we had 70 positions, we filled 41. In our assessment now, we still need to fill more. In fact, we are looking for 29 flight ops inspectors. So we advertised for those. Interviews have already been conducted. Airworthiness inspectors, good response, but in terms of flight ops, still an issue. However, we were, how many did we promising? About close to 16 that are promising in terms of the current interviews which are currently happening. So the interviews are ongoing. We are currently recruiting all over, and it's like I say, cashing is competing with the industry, competing with the global community after this scarce field. But the recruitment is on. So vacancies are still there. And we are continuously, on the technical side, continuously recruiting to make sure that we are up to speed. But I must emphasize the challenge in terms of salary. For an example, recently, we said we want to look at also internationally, to say what we can get internationally, and all over in the global, in the other aviation authorities, they said there are no resources. Can you lend us some resources for a specific period of time? And they said there are no resources. Everybody doesn't have resources. But we went to UK, they had an agency that was saying flight ops inspector, one inspector, for 3.3 million per annum, excluding the accommodation and car hire and all those kinds of things. So which is not sustainable. So that's why we're focusing mainly at home to see how best you can get the pilot trained to be inspector with their challenges.
Thank you. Okay, at least from how people
to do with the problem. I just wanted to say that they want to resume people, you don't train. That's on the lighter note. But I wanted to get your comment on the, do you have precautionary measures on global warming?
While I think about that,
just also in, now that Maria's back, we've really got to sort out this Commissioner of Civil Aviation CEO issue. I'm sure, Maria, maybe you'd like to just comment on that. It's just an anomaly, as far as I can tell. And it was raised last time with us as well.
And
I didn't even know there was such a thing as this until you raised it last time with us.
Yes, thank you, Chief. Maybe it's very important to note here in the meeting itself that this is a policy issue that needs very specific investigation, and that is one of the major projects that the department itself is involved with, so that we could change legislation. The existing legislation makes provision for a commissioner to determine and make certain safety decisions, and then for the CEO to act in a certain managerial and governance capacity. When we need to kind of interpret the legislation, it is not impossible we can motivate how we could differentiate between the duties of the CEO and of the commissioner and of the board and of the minister. I think there is a certain authority line, and we have oversight structures like the portfolio committee, which is also part of the whole oversight into aviation. So we need to interpret within the existing laws the particular roles and responsibilities of firstly the commissioner and secondly the CEO. However, in the past, and I'm quite convinced that our CEO, Mr. Jakes, indicated already as such, they had the practice for a certain short period to combine the positions of CEO and commissioner. That was done for a certain period. So now we need to look forward. We need to change the legislation eventually. This is absolutely, without doubt, the route that we will go. But we will need to look comprehensively into how we're going to do this. We can't just keep on changing the one act and then the other act and try to amend regulations. We need to look comprehensively from a policy perspective what is the system that we're going to implement for aviation, and accordingly, which model are we going to implement through our legislation. Now, that is the long-term approach, and that is the project that is already in operation. In the medium term, we need to find a suitable way in addressing the difference in the legislation. That can be done in two ways. The one is with regard to the combination of the two positions, and secondly, it would be to just motivate the difference. We can't change legislation in a day. We need to do that as I've indicated just now. So that is the challenge that we have, and that is a matter that is the object of discussion presently, and that is what we will come to the portfolio committee to report on next time. What I can say from the side of the department is that quite correctly it has been indicated that we have a performance agreement with the CAA. The basis of that performance agreement is the ACAO standards, and that is what we are going to keep the CAA to. They have basically reported, they do that on a continuous basis, reporting to the department and to the minister, that everything is favourable. And I think that is the message that we got in the annual report as well. However, and that is the second part of the challenge, we will also have these international audits. Now, some of them, we heard today, have been successful, and we congratulated the CAA for that. There are some other audits. I think there's another audit at ICAO next year as well, the finalization of certain audits. And then again, we will have to do retrospective kind of actions from an oversight and also from a governance point of view. And again, we will come here and ask ourselves, well, what did we do to anticipate that? And my comment would be basically twofold. Firstly, when we look at these standards, they are quite specific, and you need to be well trained to execute those kinds of audits and investigations that they do. But that is only the one part. You can do everything 100% according to those guidelines and prescriptions and standards. Something can still happen, and then you need to have basically an operational disaster plan. I think one of the members of the House mentioned that, how we are going to deal with that. And those are the issues that are being addressed in cooperation with the CAA. Important issue from the department is that we are committed to overseeing quality safety standards in aviation as all other parts of the industry of transport. However, we are binded by not only our own norms and standards in this country, but in addition also to international norms and standards. And that necessitates the intervention sometimes, although we respect the independence of the CAA, we need some intervention at stages because we need to answer on different levels when we are talking about aviation. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there an individual
group
which recommends
There is a work body, Harvey Bedfield is
he's an employee of the CAA and he's a commissioner. Correct. Well, in terms of international benchmarks, because we did that in terms of looking at this commissioner issue. In actual fact, it was only Zimbabwe and Nigeria that still had the term commissioner in actual fact. And that globally in practice in terms of also of the standards is that you need to have an authority that is with the requisite authority. You must have established an authority with the requisite authority that is clear in terms of the authority that it has, and it shouldn't be split, so to say. So that's basically in short what the standard is. An authority that is not split, that is just
in problems at the present, or is it just something that's a bit inelegant, but
well, if
are there irritations? I mean, that's the question I'm asking, really. Or is it just, something?
Practically, we make it work. However, when we are audited by people who are not on the ground on here in South Africa looking at working, they look at the act, they look at the standards, they look at how this thing is supposed to be, and say, in the event that there is conflict between the two individuals, what happens, etc., etc. Therefore, this is not a proper legislation foundation. This is not a proper structure.
By the way, blame Patricia Dinnell. None of us were here in this committee. She was chairing the committee at that time, so we claim no responsibility for this thing. Marie, you just wanted to add?
Yes, I think it's important to add that although we are having this legislative position between the commissioner and the CEO, the audit query, if I understood the audit correctly, the audit query is the confusion that the legislation is creating. Not only this thing between CEO and commissioner, but they don't understand the whole structure within South Africa of having a department and a ministry and a portfolio committee and parliament. When they want a safety, an aviation safety decision to be made, they want there and then one person to keep accountable. And that must not be a CEO and a board. And that is the confusion. And that is why when we talk about these two particular positions, you could just explain, firstly, this is how the differences are being managed and how the responsibility lines are. Or you can say, well, if that is a problem, just combine the position and have one accountability. But in the same breath, you must still adhere to the fact that there will be a board. There will still be other oversight structures. So that is why when you answer to the audit, you will have to go both ways and tell them, well, this is what we can do, this is what we can't do, but we can explain to you how we can operationally motivate why we operate like this.
All right. So I understand why you're saying that we can't just in January whatever abolish the Commission of Civil Aviation and just remove it from the Act. But we need to look at the thing as a model, as a paradigm, and work out and abolish ourselves. If what you're saying, Coward Audit also suggesting we should abolish Parliament. I'm sure they're not saying that. But okay. So but let's move on it as well. Even if it's not causing immediate problems, obviously there's the potential for a complication. And although we admire our colleagues in Zimbabwe as international best practice in these matters, I'm sure that there might be other interesting international best practice things to look at as well. Okay, so if we can leave it on that note, but we will come back to it. And it needs to be driven by the department, potentially. I mean, I think that's the kind of thing and how best to manage it. Okay, I think we need to close on this matter. Thank you. As I said, we've got a little bit of housekeeping. It's our last meeting, actually, of the Portfolio Committee for the year. And so we've just got some minutes and things to catch up on quickly. But thank you very much. You're welcome to listen to our minutes, but they're very boring, so you don't have to. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee.
My mamá va a leer, mamá es que la vimos.